Just remember, this is your body, your pregnancy, your birth. At the end of the day, that doctor's going to go home and go on about their business. You have to be the one to advocate for yourself and feel confident to do that.
Hi, I'm Amy Kiefer, a nurse, doula, and personal trainer.
And I'm Crystal Howald, a women's health and orthopedic physical therapist.
We're the co-founders of Expecting and Empowered, and we just so happen to be sisters. We built this business because we saw a huge gap between the information that women were given during pregnancy and postpartum and the information that they need. We're committed to helping close the gap so that women are better equipped to navigate these demanding and challenging years.
Yes, we're both moms of three, so we know firsthand how many changes women go through physically, mentally, and emotionally because women aren't getting enough information to make informed decisions about their own health. It leaves mothers picking up the pieces afterwards. We need that to change.
With our professional backgrounds, we're going to pull the curtain back on this season and give you the information you need to thrive.
We're on a mission to change women's health. Let's do this.
We've had a midwife on the podcast before and a doula, but today we're lucky to have our first OBGYN. Dr. Nicole Rankins is a board certified practicing OBGYN. She's a wife, a mom of two girls, and the host of the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. She's also been serving pregnant women for over 20 years. So Dr. Nicole, I would love to hear what your journey looked like when you decided to become an OBGYN.
Yeah. So actually, well, first off, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and feel honored that I'm the first OBGYN. So I got to make sure I come through and do it great. So I initially actually majored in college in mathematics and mechanical engineering. I was going to be an engineer, I thought. And then in the middle of like doing this, my studies, because I was, you know, doing two degrees, I was in the bathroom in the dorm and I looked in the mirror and saw myself wearing a white coat. It sounds crazy, but it is literally what happened. And from there, the seeds just started getting planted that maybe I want to do something different. Maybe I want to do something different. And I ended up going to medical school. And then in medical school, I actually went between, in my mind, general surgery and OBGYN, because I like doing procedures. I like doing things with my hands. And I really hated having male patients. So I landed on OBGYN. And now here we are.
Oh, I love that. As I touched on in the intro and right ahead of the podcast, you are our first OBGYN on the podcast. So I thought it would be important if we just level set what you do and what makes it different from what a midwife does.
Sure. So midwives are experts in low risk pregnancy and birth. So that's probably the easiest way to summarize what they do. Experts in low risk pregnancy and birth, although sometimes these days they're doing more higher risk people, but in general, they're experts in low risk pregnancy and birth. Some midwives do also do gynecology care. So they'll do annual exams and birth control and things like that. And it really just depends on the midwife. So there are different types of midwives, but in general, if you're doing a hospital birth, you're going to encounter a certified nurse midwife who is a nurse by training and then went and got additional training to become a midwife. Whereas a physician, an OBGYN, we are trained in the full spectrum of low-risk pregnancy, high-risk pregnancy, GYN care, GYN surgery as a general OBGYN. And then underneath being an OBGYN, you can specialize and there are different tracks and things that you can do. What I do specifically, which I think is important to share because I think especially pregnant folks, you're more and more going to encounter OBGYNs like me, is I am an OB hospitalist, meaning that I only work in the hospital. I only work on labor and delivery. So I do 24-hour shifts at a time, and I may be the doctor who's there when you come to the hospital to give birth. These days, more and more OB hospitalists are becoming a bigger part of obstetrics for a couple of reasons. One is safety. It's increases safety, decreases complications when you have an OBGYN who's in the hospital 24 hours a day. And it also helps decrease the C-section rate because there's no rush for us to, you know, we're not leaving the hospital. We're going to be in the hospital. It doesn't matter if you give birth at 8 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock at night, because we're still going to be there. So there's no impetus to push birth along. So it also can decrease the C-section rate to have OB hospitalist. And more practices are going to that model where you have people who are in the office and then you'll see a different doctor when you're in the hospital, or it may be a doctor who you've never met before.
And I think that this is part of the conversation where we can help to educate, because we do have a lot of pregnant listeners. I went to a OBGYN practice. Mm-hmm. So I had an OB that I would see at most all of my appointments, mm-hmm. but then they had shifts in the hospital. So they took turns being the person that would deliver. So mm-hmm. a lot of times, if you're in a situation like that, your OBGYN that you might have gotten really comfortable with might not be the person that's going to deliver you in the hospital.
Yeah, I almost will put it even further and say likely not be the person, just because of the way the schedule falls and all of those kinds of things. It's a high likelihood that it, if your practice functions like that, that you're not going to have your own doctor for the birth.
Yeah. I was 0-3. I never had her, okay. But I had great care. And uh-huh. so you just have to understand, because I think when people are surprised, mm-hmm. you know, or they have this expectation, they can get disappointed.
Sure.
But I wanted to talk to you. I know a lot of people, when they're going out and they're looking for a practice or they're mm-hmm. looking for an OBGYN, they feel like they're not sure how to make sure that they're a good fit. Do you yep. have any tips for that?
Yeah, I do. So first off, do not automatically assume that the person you've gone to for years for your annual gynecology checks is necessarily going to be the best person for you during your pregnancy care. They can approach pregnancy in a completely different way that may not align with what you're interested in. So definitely be open to changing would be the first thing I would say, because I've seen so many people say, oh, you know, I've just been going to this OB for my, you know, PAPs and annual checkups or whatever. I'm just going to stay with them. Just reevaluate the relationship and make sure it's still okay. You can certainly ask for recommendations from friends in the community and Facebook groups or online for people in the community for recommendations about pregnancy care. I see so many like local Facebook group, mom groups kind of thing. So that's a great place to look. And then you may not know the answer right away in terms of what you want for your birth, but if you have a general idea that you want a low intervention birth, or you want to try for an unmedicated birth, then these are questions that you can ask in the beginning to see, kind of feel out where they are on things like that and how they support things like that. You can even ask them a question like, how do you approach pregnancy and birth care? Some people may be a little bit put off. I don't want to say put off. It may take them a moment to answer. But if someone asked me that, my response would be something along the lines of, I approach pregnancy and birth as a normal, natural process. It's happened literally for billions of years. However, there are chances or opportunities or things when it pops up that it is not normal, or it deviates and there are problems that can occur. And then I'm ready to address those problems if need be. But we're going to start from a place of assuming that this is normal. Things are going well. We're going to go along with that, but we're prepared to deal with any issues that come up. You'll find some OBs who treat every pregnancy and birth like it's a disaster waiting to happen. So they really just are like, it's all, you know, it's a disaster. It's this sort of like doom and gloom attitude that filters into how they practice and how they intervene and things like that. So kind of think about what you want and start asking questions. And then the final thing I would say is trust your gut. If you are asking questions and you feel dismissed, or they're not responding, or you're getting like side eyes kind of thing, if your gut is telling you, I'm not sure, I don't think this person is right for me or what I want for my pregnancy care, then listen to that and then find someone else.
I love that. And right along with that conversation, I know something that you're passionate about talking about on your account is advocating for yourself as a pregnant person. I think this is super cool coming from an OBGYN. You're literally saying to advocate for yourself. But I know that a lot of women have a hard time with that, especially when they are in labor and delivery. Mm-hmm. So I wanted you to shed some light on how can women prepare themselves to be their best advocate, and also maybe just remind them that it doesn't necessarily have to be a confrontational conversation.
Absolutely. So the reason that you have to advocate for yourself is that the reality is if you're giving birth in a U.S., in the U.S. maternity system, you're giving birth in a system that's founded on a patriarchal approach to birth, tells women what to do, tells them what happens, takes away power and control from them over what happens in their own bodies. And for those of us from marginalized communities, like based on race or socioeconomic status, can be racist, can be classist, all of those things. So unfortunately, we're giving birth in that system, in the background of that system, and some of those things still are around today. It is not all doom and gloom, though. There are lots of us out there who are doing the right thing, who do center people in the birth experience as they should be, but you have to do a little bit of work in order to find the right doctor, find the right hospital, maybe add a doula to your care team so that you can go in as prepared as you can. You have taken control of as much as you can. So that's why it's important to advocate for yourself. And the biggest thing I will say is that you have to do the work during the pregnancy. You can't just wait until you show up in labor and like hand your birth plan over and think that that's going to do anything, because it's not. Okay. Yes, if you happen to be in a system that does support you and you know you're fine, then sure, you're not going to have any problems, but you could wait until the end, show up with this birth plan, and they're like, we don't do any of that stuff. Like, this is not how we practice. And then you're sort of stuck. So you really want to make sure you educate yourself. So the biggest thing is about education, please do some childbirth education. This is a hill I will die on, is please do childbirth education. I don't care if it's online. I mean, I happen to have an online class. There are online options, there are in-person options. Please, there's so many options out there. Just please do some childbirth education so you can advocate for yourself, and then ask questions during the prenatal visits, because that's the time when things are low key. You can get a sense for how things are, and then you can be prepared for what's to come and anticipate if need be, based on your own unique circumstances, your own unique pregnancy. Like a birth plan, for instance, is great, but it's something that needs to be discussed during pregnancy. It's something that needs to be backed up by childbirth education so that you can advocate for the things that are in that birth plan. So just definitely educate yourself, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming. You can listen to this podcast, my podcast. There's other things, you know, while you're cooking, while you're in the car. Well, I don't want you to feel like you got to read every single book. It actually doesn't take like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to be ready. Just a little bit, and be confident to ask questions. Now, the thing I will say about people being hesitant about advocating for themselves is that we live in a system where, in our society in general, where women's voices can sometimes be squashed, or, you know, you're being the B word if you're speaking up or things like that. Just remember, this is your body, your pregnancy, your birth. At the end of the day, that doctor's going to go home and go on about their business. You have to be the one to advocate for yourself and feel confident to do that. Again, it doesn't have to be like confrontational or mean. Remember that doctors are humans too. We actually, most of us want to help, but when you approach it from a place of, I'm just trying to get more informed, I want to get more information, I know your expertise, I'm just trying to get some things, then you can approach it as a conversational way, gather information, and then go from there. And the last thing I'll say is, now, if people aren't respecting you when you start the nice way, then you absolutely need to like take it up to whatever level you need to in order to get the things you need. But start from that kind and just, we're having a conversation place, and connect on that human level, and then go from there.
Yeah, we're partners with you in educating. I think it's like, where, like you said, wherever you're getting it, this podcast, your podcast, because what I think happens when a woman is educated is she knows what is normal during the experience, and it makes it less scary. I think when women go in blind to this huge event,
yes,
it makes it more scary, because these common things that happen, they don't know that they're common. So then they get more scared, which I think puts them in a tough position. So we are all about education, free education, get as much as you can so that you're going to understand what's going to happen in your body. I wanted to expand a little bit because I did see a post of yours on Instagram and it said MD stands for medical doctor. It does not stand for makes decisions about what happens to your body. It's right along the path that we've been talking, but I was wondering if you can expand on that.
Yeah. I mean, we are not like your parents. We are not the people who get to make the decisions about what happens to you in your body. Nothing should happen to you without your consent. It should be a discussion. We use words in our medical system like allow. We don't allow you to eat or drink. We don't allow you to get up and move during labor because there's this background of we get to decide what happens for you in your body. And honestly, that's not just in birth. That's why the government is trying to be in medicine, which is ridiculous. And it's a whole nother conversation, but it is not, your doctor is not the one who makes the decisions about what happens for you in your body. Now, some people come to us and they're like, can you just help me decide? Or what would you do? And that's totally fine. But the default should be, we're giving you the information and helping you to make the best decision that works for you. We do not have that power and authority over what happens in your body, no matter what we say. No, it's not there.
Yeah, I remember my third birth. I did, for whatever reason, I really like to give birth on my feet. And they were trying to get me to go in the bed. And I was like, if you can't tell me why I have to go into the bed, mm-hmm. I would prefer to be at the side of the bed.
Right.
And then they just worked with me. But, you know, if I had just gone into the bed against my wishes, mm-hmm. that could have also been what happened. Yep. I think that we build this up that it's like this huge thing. And it was just a very short, especially if you say, can you give me a reason why I have to do that? And mm-hmm. then you can hear them out. They might have a great reason why you have to do that. But if there isn't one, then usually, hopefully they can work with you.
Yeah. And speaking to birth positions, that's totally out of, you know, some people are just so used to doing things a certain way that they need a nudge to think outside of, no, I don't have to have this person laying on their back in the bed. I should be able to support them however they need to be supported and not make them do something that feels comfortable for me. So we just really have to push that culture shift in obstetrics for sure.
We're going to take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by the Expecting and Empowered Prepping for Labor and Delivery course. This is our self-paced online course that will help prepare your mind, body, and partner for what's to come during the major event of labor and delivery. Here's a quote from someone that took our course. The Expecting and Empowered course made most of my anxiety about giving birth go away. The more educated I became, the more I could advocate for myself and this baby. The course got my wheels turning and really allowed me to wrap my head around the birthing process. What makes this course different from others is the unique combination of expertise between myself and my sister, Crystal. We marry her physical therapist knowledge with my background as a nurse, personal trainer, and doula. We also have 6 births under our belts, 3 vaginal and 3 cesarean. This helps us to deliver real, tangible tips, such as the best positions to help labor progress, what to actually expect during each stage of labor, and what your partner can actually do to be helpful. This and so much more is why this course is all you need to feel ready to tackle labor. Knowledge is power. Make sure you use the promo code podcast25 at checkout to save 25% off the Prepping for Labor and Delivery course. We'll put the link in the show notes. And now back to our show. When we told our followers that you were coming on the podcast, they had some questions for you. Mm-hmm. I do think that what happens in this realm is there are a lot of myths that are still out there. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to try to do a little myth busting with the next couple questions. One thing that came in is it true that some women have a small pelvis and that can affect their birth, or is that a myth?
Girl, you're going to have me fighting this morning because this is something that I wish, if I hear another OBGYN say this, I will like lose it. No one can tell you that your pelvis is too small to have a baby. It is exceedingly rare for someone to have a pelvis that cannot fit a baby. Now, it may be that the baby comes down in a certain position and it makes it difficult for your baby to fit through your pelvis, but it is so rare that you have a shape of your pelvis that makes it challenging for birth. So some doctors will say, oh, you know, they'll check, do a cervical exam, a vaginal exam. Oh, your pelvis is kind of small. I'm not sure that the baby's going to fit. No one can tell you if a baby will fit in your pelvis except the baby trying through labor to fit in your pelvis. That is the only way to know if the baby will fit. So if someone tells you your pelvis is too small, those clinical estimates, research has shown, are inaccurate over and over and over and over again. I can't tell you how many times I've done an exam and I say, you know, maybe it does feel a little tight. I mean, I keep that information in my head because I know that it doesn't change anything, and the baby comes out just fine. Or the flip side, it feels like there's a ton of room in someone's pelvis, and then for whatever reason, they end up having a cesarean. So do not let anyone tell you that your pelvis is too small. There's no way to check. There's no x-rays to do. There's no special ultrasounds, nothing. The only way to know if your baby will fit is to try.
Now, when you guys are telling us that we are going to have a big baby, mm-hmm. is that like, are there measurements that you can now do to get a really great estimation of how big the baby is?
Nope. No? So third trimester ultrasound is not very accurate. We often do that based on ultrasound. We can feel and get a guess. And once you do it a lot of times, you get more accurate at it. But third trimester ultrasound is notoriously inaccurate at estimating birth weight. We're getting better, and I do think that it's getting to be more accurate, but still, even with those guidelines, depending on whether or not you have diabetes or not, the weight limits are pretty high that we say or bring up the possibility of cesarean birth. It's, if you don't have diabetes, it's 5,000 grams, which is like 10, almost 11 pounds before we say maybe have a C-section. If you have diabetes, it's 4,500 grams. So even, you know, most pelvis can accommodate a bigger baby. So we're not that great at estimating the size.
Wait, this is just a curious question of my own. I'm going a little off script. Yeah. When a woman has babies, like multiple babies, not at the same time, you know, she's going to have three kids. Sure. Is it common for those kids to be around the same size, or could it really be all over the board?
Yeah. If it's the same parents, so same mom and dad, then generally they are going to be around the same size or within a pound of each other generally. But I will say this, the only predictable thing about birth is that it's unpredictable. Okay. Yeah. so we can say there are some things, we notice trends, but it is unpredictable, and we have to go with the flow of the moment. And that's why, getting back to the point about education is so important, because that's what you can control. You can control how educated you are. You can control some of the things you should have an idea about, but go into birth knowing that it can't be planned. It's unpredictable. All you can control is what you can control.
Yeah. I think it gets hard because a lot of things get put into women's minds. Like, I remember I was a nurse and carrying my first child, and everyone on my floor was like, oh, you're going to go early. You're going to go early because of the way I looked. Right. And then I got that in my head, and it was actually hard to go overdue, because I was like, all these freaking people told me I was going to go early. And now here I'm waddling around my freaking nursing unit at 40 weeks pregnant.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So as much as you can, try to keep a clear head that some of those things are really just myths. And that it is going to be a little bit unpredictable, especially if it's your first, on when you're going to have that baby. Something else that people really wanted to know about from you is mucus plugs. They wanted to know, what is it?
Right.
Do I lose it? What happens if I lose it? Is that a sure sign of labor? Tell us about mucus plugs.
Yeah, I just did a post on this actually. So the mucus plug is like a collection of mucus that's in the cervix, and it helps to provide a barrier between the bacteria that we all normally have in our vaginas and keeping that bacteria from getting up around the baby. So there's the mucus, and then there's the amniotic sac. Those are the things that protect the baby from that normal bacteria that we normally have in our bodies. Well, as you get closer to birth, then that mucus starts to come out. But here's the thing. One is that there is no predictable relationship when you start to see the mucus plug. And I'm talking about full term. So yeah. If you see it early or preterm, then those are things that are concerning. But full term, 37 weeks or more, if you start to see mucus plug, there's no predictable relationship between when you start to see that come out and when you will go into labor. Okay. So it could be hours, it could be days, it could be weeks. So if you see it, it's not a reason to call your doctor or your midwife or your doula even. I just made a post that said, please you don't have to call anybody if your mucus plug comes out. It just means that it's starting to come out and your body's getting ready for birth. That's all that it means. And in the post, I said, don't call your doctor or midwife. And I had some doulas say, can you please add, you don't have to call your doula either. So I think it's just one of those things where our society, especially TV and movies, has made labor and birth like you have a contraction or the mucus plug comes out and it's like, oh, yeah, right to the hospital. And it's like, it's just not like that. It's just a normal part of your body warming up for labor. So if you see it, just note that it's there. Note that your body is getting ready. The other thing I would say is that it can happen over multiple times. Like it may not just be one time that it comes out. You may continue to see mucus discharge, and that is totally normal too.
Yeah, I didn't really notice my first two. And then my third one, I was the girl that I sent it to my friend who is a labor and delivery nurse.
Right.
I was like, what it was.
Right.
But you want to know what I wanted her to say? I wanted her to say, you're going to go into labor.
Yep. And she was like, no.
She literally said what you said. And I was like, well, that was very annoying, but thank you for your response. I do think one of the challenging parts of your guys' job is that the unpredictability when you're dealing with vulnerable women, like we're pregnant, we're at the end of pregnancy, we want to meet our baby. Mm-hmm. It can be really challenging to be very pregnant.
Yep.
And then a lot of the answers are like, oh, sometimes you could go into labor, hours later, or it could be weeks. And you're like, okay, but that's really hard for me to experience that. Like it is a little bit of letting go of control.
1000%. It's the first lesson in parenthood, really, because you're going to have to do the same thing as a parent where you can't control. There's so many things that you can't control. So you just have to learn as best we can. And I think honestly, this is a good lesson in life to go with the flow of the things and live and be and experience the exact moment that you have in front of you.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that was a really good reminder. Something that we wanted to definitely cover with you, because I know that you are very outspoken about it, is Black maternal health. We have an issue in this country. I want to read you a quote that I'm sure you're familiar with. In 2021, the maternal mortality rate for Black women was 2.6 times the rate for white women. I'd love for you to talk about statistics, your personal experience, and how Black women can take their power back during labor and delivery.
Sure. Yeah. So the first thing I'll say is that the reason that this happens is because of racism, and that Black women are treated differently than other groups. Sometimes people will say, oh, it's because they're more overweight or they don't take as good care of themselves. And it's not true. It's racism. My risk as a highly educated Black woman for a preterm birth is about the same as a white woman with a high school diploma, roughly. And those differences come from racism and then the stress of existing in a society with racism. So please understand that it's not personal individual factors. It's how we're treated in the system. So there's that. Now, the second thing I'm going to say for Black, anyone who's listening, who's a Black woman or person giving birth, or you're supporting someone who's doing so, these statistics are important and they are alarming. But I also want you to know that the most likely thing is that you will survive during birth. Okay. You are actually not likely to die, because some people hear that 2.6 times and it gets turned into, I'm at an extremely high risk of dying, or I'm going to die, or those kinds of things. And that fear can be crippling. and you're not enjoying your pregnancy, you're not enjoying the moment because you're so worried about dying. So although it's important to understand that you're at an increased risk, the overall risk is that you are going to make it out alive. Okay. And then important things to help make sure you're ready in that system is, again, education is so key in advocating for yourself. I recommend that you tell your doctor, listen, I've seen these statistics about Black maternal health and I'm scared. I'm worried. Can you tell me what are some of the things that you do or can do in order to help me feel more safe? And if you have a compassionate, caring doctor or midwife, they are going to respond in a way that says, hey, we're going to listen to you. We're going to be vigilant for any issues that come up. You're going to get that reassurance back that they take this seriously and are going to do the things that are necessary in order to help keep you safe. For me, my personal experience has not been anything where I can say, of course, I'm an obstetrician. So, and where I gave birth, people knew me. So I didn't have any instances where I felt like I was treated a different way. Now, I did have a preterm birth. My first daughter had a rare intestinal malformation that happens in like 1 in 10,000 births. And she, although they're normally born full term, she was born 8 weeks early. And then just in my circle of friends, I have a group of friends who are all physicians, all OBGYNs. I had three of us had preterm births. One of us had severe preeclampsia. I think three of us had C-section. So, you know, it's just, that's just one of my own little personal cohort of like, even though we're all highly educated, we all, and healthy, we all had these kind of issues. Is it because, you know, we're stressed and those kinds of things? Those are hard questions to answer. But know that it's those two things. It's related to racism. Educate yourself and know that the most likely thing is that you're going to be survive. You just have to be ready and prepared to advocate for yourself. Oh, and the final thing I will say is don't take no for an answer. And this is really for anybody. And that doesn't mean that that there is something that's necessarily wrong. You just don't want your concerns dismissed. So if someone's telling you your pain is nothing, you don't have to be worried about it. You want a more of an explanation like, I understand that you're having pain. We've done all of the things to look for anything that is a threat or danger. We're not seeing anything there. So now let's talk about how we manage the pain. You want to see that, not that there's always a problem, but you just want to know that they are taking your concerns seriously. And that's really, really important.
Yeah. My friend Molly, who's been on the podcast and she's talked about this, she just was very dismissed by the healthcare system a couple times. Her first and second, her second birth was a little bit scary. And so for three and then for four, she really, there was an OBGYN that she trusted from the practice. And also she hired me as her doula so that there's just one more person in there advocating, making sure that she's heard was the main thing for her. So,
and that's where a doula can be really, really important. And you have to be, I will say, ask questions about a doula also, because not all doulas feel comfortable doing advocacy roles. It really depends on the doula, and that's a totally personal choice, but you want to make sure your doula feels comfortable advocating for you. But it really does help to have that person there, because the differences can be stark. One of the most memorable episodes I had of my podcast, I had a birth photographer on, and she just was like explaining how floored she was when she could see the difference in the way her black clients were treated versus the way her white clients were treated, as she like the fly on the wall as the birth photographer. And like, these are the same, like, they have money to pay for a birth photographer there, you know, and the differences in treatment were just stark. So it's really, that's obviously not like a big study example, that kind of thing, but it really does happen.
Yeah. I hate that that is an extra burden, because as we've been talking about the whole episode, there's already so much that goes. So to have that mental load of, okay, I need to make sure that I'm advocating for myself. I need to make sure I'm asking questions. I need to make sure I'm at a place I feel safe. So thank you so much for being open about that and for your advocacy. I wanted to end the conversation by asking, is there anything else that you want our community to know about OBGYNs? I know ahead of time when we were talking, I said, I feel like on Instagram, you guys can almost get like a negative connotation. But as we know, there is definitely a time and a place and a need for OBGYNs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we are great when there's a high risk situation or problem. You definitely want a skilled OBGYN on your team when you have any issues. We don't do as well with low intervention, low risk things and kind of stepping back and let the physiologic process unfold. But I want to say that to your point that sometimes we get a bad rap, it's important to acknowledge that that reputation is earned a bit because of the way that we care for women in our system. So it's not that people are making it up, or because sometimes I see OBGYNs and they want to like not hear that, but we need to listen to that and say, right, y'all, why are people saying these things about some of it is earned. I think one of the biggest examples I had, I have a class where I teach about making a birth plan, and somebody went and asked her doctor, like, what's their C-section rate? And he said 80%. And it was like, how do you have an 80%? You are literally C-sectioning, like, unless the baby's falling out, you're cutting all of your patients. So some of that is earned. But I will say on the flip side, there are so many of us, because I have people say, I wish everyone was like you. I wish, you could deliver my baby. And I wish I could be at everybody's birth. But there really are, I am not a unicorn. There are many OBGYNs who center people in their birth experience, who support low intervention birth if that's what you want. They support if you want to get an epidural the minute you walk in the door, then that they support what you want. They really are there to help you have the birth experience that's best and safest for you. You just have to ask the questions and find that person. So hope is not completely lost. There are opportunities for you to have a great birth experience for sure.
I had incredible experiences with OBGYNs, very, very low intervention birth. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. You have to ask the questions. Unfortunately, we have to kind of vet, but it's important, especially if you're looking for a certain type of birth.
100. And I always say, like, I would, my dream would be to not have to do my podcast anymore and not have to do any of this education, because it's not needed, because our system by default would treat people the way that they deserve to be treated. But until then, there are options out there for you to learn and be ready and advocate for that change. I believe it'll be birthing women, people who are the ones who help push for that change and push us to be better. So keep speaking up. It's important.
I just get a little annoyed about how slow the change is for women, but hopefully we're helping these conversations. Yeah.
Yes,
the medical system in general.
So slow. Yes.
But hopefully the listeners have gotten some information today that can at least help them on the path to finding a great care person that can really help them meet their goals. Yep. I want our listeners to know where they can find more of you and your resources.
Sure. So my podcast is called All About Pregnancy and Birth. That is like that's my baby, I call it. And there I share birth stories. I interview experts. I talk about solo topics. You can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins, and I share information there. I am on, my website is drnicolerankins.com, and there are like free downloadable things and classes you can check that out there too.
Amazing. If you guys enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you went over to Dr. Nicole's podcast. We'll link it in the show notes and go listen to one of her episodes for us.